Welcome to the Judge John Hodgman podcast. I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne. We're in chambers this week, clearing the docket with legendarily spooky hockey ghost, Judge John Hodgman.
You refer to my Halloween costume, my last minute Halloween costume?
You know, you did a great job.
Thank you.
You were dressed as an extinct hockey ghost.
Yes.
You have a passion, as longtime listeners know, you have a passion for
dead hockey teams.
Hockey teams that don't exist anymore.
It's the only sport I follow.
To be clear, no passion for hockey as far as I know.
Not particularly, no.
Just like the idea of the San Francisco Sea Lions.
I did order a hat this week.
Yeah.
For a new expansion existing hockey team that is about to start play. It is not a dead hockey team. It is a hockey team just being born. A minor league team that a listener alerted me to in Savannah, Georgia, called the Savannah Pirate Ghosts, because it's just the best name for a team.
Yeah, it's doing a lot. The only minor hockey team that I have any allegiance to is the Belfast Giants of Belfast, Northern Ireland, both because my stepmother is from Belfast,
right,
but also because, you know, this is a professional hockey team, but it's a relatively low-level professional hockey team. There's
right.
not a ton of ice in Belfast.
Right.
Naturally occurring.
Right.
But one of the guys who's one of the people of the team, you know, there's minor league hockey, there's three people that work for the team.
Right.
And one of those people is a Max Funster. And he said, anytime I'm in Belfast, I can go to a free minor league Irish league hockey game. It's probably the major leagues of Irish.
Well,
the problem
with giant hockey is that the rink also has to be giant. Otherwise,
yeah,
the Giants have no room to maneuver.
That's a good point.
And instead of Zambonis, they have 50 men with pork rinds skating over the surface of the ice to grease it. That's how you get it ready for.
Why not?
That's how you get it ready for Giants. It's a Paul Bunyan reference, Jesse. Well, you made a reference, an obscure cultural reference to my Halloween costume, which was my son and I, we decided our costumes this year would just be to get creepy contact lenses. And because that's just creepy, and that's all you need to do. You need to put in the contact lenses.
Yeah.
And then I realized that I had this new hat from this dead team, the Ottawa Nationals. And I had this Hartford Whalers jersey that I had never worn. Someone sent it to me, and I had no need to walk around Park Slope wearing a Hartford Whalers jersey looking like Kevin Smith's analyst or accountant.
It's called
or
a sweater, John, but keep going.
Sorry, I should have known that. And I had ghost makeup, pale ghost makeup. And I had ruled that, co-ruled with our friends Mark and Hal on the We Got This podcast here on Maximum Fun. Podcast, I call it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a chef's kiss of a podcast.
Right.
That the best Halloween costume is ghost, because it's just, you can do any kind of ghost. I was like, well, what if I am the ghost of extinct hockey?
Yeah.
So I spent about an hour on Halloween getting these contacts in, because I don't wear contacts normally. And I'll tell you something, you know, I don't like to use our son's name on the podcast, respect his privacy, so I'll refer to him as Hodgmanillo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our daughter is known as Hodgmina, and this is Hodgmanillo, the younger child. If it were not for Hodgmanillo just, you know, coaching me and encouraging me to put in these creepy contact lenses, I would have given up. My son forced me to achievement. And then I put on the makeup, and I put on the sweater, and I put on the hat. Took a picture for Instagram, started blowing up the charts, got ready to hand out this candy. We had two trick-or-treaters.
Yeah.
And they were little kids, and they were genuinely scared of me. And I felt really bad. Two trick-or-treaters. Sunday night, it's a school night. They're not going to go out late at night.
Yeah. Let's get into the docket. Here's a case from Byron in Massachusetts. I am a suburban dad who works from home. Since I'm not digging ditches or regularly sweating during my job, I feel that I don't need to change my jeans very often, just once every 3 weeks.
Wow.
I am not a slob.
Okay, Byron.
I just don't like how jeans feel fresh out of the wash. Plus, it's a nice way to mark off the weeks until spring.
Okay. What does that mean?
It serves as a sort of harvest calendar. I have 6 pairs of the same brand of jeans. So if the jeans wearing season in New England is roughly 32 weeks.
And I can confirm it is. That is the jeans wearing season.
I can buoy my spirits by thinking, I only have to wear this pair 2 more rounds before it's warm out again. Anyway, my entire family hates my process. He learned this jeans technique from reading The Artist's Way.
Yeah.
My wife thinks it's not sanitary. Mm-hmm. My kids think I'm weird. Should I have said bird by bird instead? The Artist's Way.
I think bird by bird is funnier.
Okay. Yeah. I swear my jeans don't stink. And if I do mess them up, like if I spill a plate of pasta on them, I don't wait 3 weeks to change my pants. I wash them. Please, judge, allow me to wear my jeans for 3 weeks.
Yeah, I can confirm, Jesse, that the jeans wearing season in New England is 32 weeks. The exception is the months of January and February, which is shorts season. That's when you wear shorts outside.
Sorry, you said the jeans season is how long?
32 weeks.
Do you mean 10 2/3 rounds?
I'm sorry. You're right. I forgot. I apologize that we're working on Byron time. So Jesse, I'm gonna say something to you, and I'm gonna submit myself to your judgment, since you are a menswear enthusiast and fashion icon and arbiter. I will wear a pair of pants. I don't wear jeans. Just never worked with my look. But I'll wear a pair of pants probably 5 or 6 days in a row. One pair of pants. And I'm guessing from your silence that that's not good.
What kind of pants are we talking about?
We're talking about a utility kilt.
Chinos.
What?
We're talking about chinos?
Yeah, like twill, cotton twill pants, chinos. I'm a chinos guy, I guess is what it is. Yeah. And I get them on the sort of more workwear side of the spectrum, you know?
Yeah. You wear your khakis with a cuff and a crease.
Yeah, yeah, like a selvage. You can see the selvage.
You wear only a Ben Davis gorilla cut.
I don't know what you're talking about at this point. But that's too much,
listing,
right? 5 or 6
listing pants.
5 or 6 days. I got some pants. I got some pants from Raleigh Denim Company in Raleigh, North Carolina. They're very, really, really nice. But not I don't get their jeans, I get their other pants.
I have to say, John, there is a whole subculture built around sick fades. Sick fades is an aesthetic of indigo dyed, particularly denim, that fetishizes the patterns of wear that blue jeans develop as they are worn.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that process of getting the highest contrast fades, getting the most difference between the dark parts of your jeans and the light parts of your jeans, so you can see the wear the most distinctly and vividly.
Yeah.
Is to wash the jeans relatively rarely.
Uh-huh.
And to wash them very gently.
Mm-hmm.
So typically your average John's enthusiast who loves sick fades will buy a pair of jeans, and they may wear them as much as 6 months at a time without washing them.
Okay.
I don't support that practice.
Yeah, I don't think that's what either Byron nor I have going on here.
No.
We're not looking for an aesthetic affect.
Right.
Hey, Jesse, I got a chat message from producer Jennifer Marmer asking a question about these sick faders. Jennifer Marmer, what's your question?
My question was, are these the same folks that put their jeans in the freezer to de-stinkify them?
Yeah, that's the same folks. Sometimes they will soak their jeans, which you typically need to do when you have new jeans, especially if they're unsanforized. They will soak their jeans sometimes by running into the ocean. That's a popular thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then wearing them until they dry. Or wearing them into the bathtub and then wearing them around the house until they're dry. All of these things are a little bit, they're a little bit of kind of goofy, charming rituals rather than things that actually make a difference.
You know what I say about these people who run into the ocean, these Californians, I presume, who run into the ocean to get their jeans all wet and then get into the bath and walk around their house? I say they're a bunch of drips. That's what I say. Drip, drip, drip. Bet they don't even wear shirts when they're dripping around their house.
So there are a few reasons to wash your pants. One is because they have stains that you can see, and you don't want people to see stains on your pants.
Visual.
Or dirt that you
That's
can see.
That's a visual reason, yeah.
Yeah. One is stanktual. It's because they have become stank.
Right.
That is through the various actions of the body.
Yes.
That is through, you know, it could be cooking in them and the cooking odors get in them. It could be that you're in a smoky club in 1920s Paris. And there are whether many you're, ways whether to you're get stank hey, into
And whether
clothing.
You're cooking or whether you're at the club, you're also farting. It's just happening
exactly.
All the time, no. If you're me.
That's called tutual
farter
issues.
Farter of the year.
And then the third is wear. So your clothing, you're balancing the relationship between the wear that comes from washing your clothing and the wear that comes from not washing your clothing. So washing your clothing, especially in a machine, wears it out. Yeah. The tumbling process, putting it in the dryer, the dryer sheets, if you use dryer sheets that lift the little hairs on the fabric, all of these things cause wear in your clothing.
Sure.
But so does the stuff that comes from your body into the clothes. This is why those guys that wear jeans for a year at a time, they have blowouts of seams in the upper between the legs area.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's the combination of friction and soil.
Yeah, if you fart real hard, you'll blow out the seat. I've heard about it. Sick fades.
Yeah. Sick fades. And and so those are the three reasons, and you kind of have to balance those things, right? So a shirt gets stank and often visually soiled right away, one time, when you wear it one time.
I don't wear shirts for 4 days in a row. I change my shirt and my underwears and my socks every day. I just wear the same. Okay, go on. Just thought you were accusing me.
Lightweight cotton pants,
yeah,
I think often are getting stained. They're often getting soiled by sweat because they're worn in warmer weather. And they're lightweight, so they're going to wear faster.
Yeah.
For me, lightweight cotton pants are something that I wash pretty much every time I wear them.
Every time.
Because I'm getting them dirty.
You walked us all through this whole thing. I knew that this was going to be bad for me. All right.
But I think that if they're not visibly soiled and if they're not smelly, lightweight cotton pants, to wear them a few times is totally fine.
Also, no one ever sees me. I don't go anywhere. I'm not leaving this office. Walk across the street.
For me, I probably wouldn't wear them more than twice, maybe, okay. But
all right.
Your choice.
All right.
With blue jeans, I mean, blue jeans were built to be left in a mine. The reason that they find old blue jeans in mines, when these guys that are like blue jean prospectors that find 19th century blue jeans, the reason they look in mines is not just because mines preserve the jeans. It's because miners would leave their jeans in the mine, put them on over their clothes when they got there, and then leave them when they left.
They would dump
them. Yeah. They're designed to be worn without washing. Now, does that mean that they won't get stinky? No. Does that mean that they won't get stains on them? No. Does that mean that they won't wear? No. Although they're very tough.
They're tough.
Relative to other types of pants.
They're tough skins. That was a brand of jeans.
Yeah.
That they tried to make me wear when I was a child. And I'm like, this is not tweedy enough for me. Take these tough skins away.
So that's all a long way of saying that this is not an unreasonable number of times to wear jeans by any means. It's totally reasonable number of times to wear jeans. The only thing I would suggest is he might consider alternating between pairs of jeans, because letting your jeans have more time off of your body will help reduce the amount of stank.
Okay. So you're saying that this is okay what Byron is up to here?
Now,
I mean, I don't know if Byron will be able to handle switching out the jeans from the different lunar cycles. Do you know what I mean? Because if he wears one pair of jeans in the fall for 3 days, then switches them out for a springtime, Maybe all of a sudden it'll be night outside. Do you know, the world won't know what's going on. Suddenly it'll start snowing in the middle of July.
Here's the thing, John. I believe him when he says that they don't stink and he does wash them if they get stained. I don't think that them wearing excessively is going to be an issue because they're blue jeans and he's washing them reasonably frequently for blue jeans. His wife's objection is that it's not sanitary, which is true, but pants are generally not sanitary. Right. We sit on things and sweat from our special parts all day long into pants. That's just the nature of pants. His kids think he's weird. That's great. That's the whole point of being a parent, is to do things that make your children uncomfortable because they're weird in ways that are gentle and friendly like this.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe him. I believe that he would have said that if his pants were stinky, he would have either admitted that he thought his pants were stinky or his wife thought his pants were stinky.
Okay.
And so I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt.
All right. I thank you for that expert testimony. Taking all of that into consideration, Byron, I do not believe you. Sorry, Jesse Thorne. Byron, I think you stink. I believe you wash your pants after you spill pasta on them now. After the obvious pasta incident that happened and people looked at you and said, go wash your pants, Byron. But as someone who wears my pants too much, a different kind of pant, obviously, 4 to 5 days in a row, I sense the stink on my pants. And just because jeans are tougher and won't get as worn out, and indeed are often by sick faders worn out on purpose. I think I would say after 3 weeks, you know, you are working from home, but just because they can do something doesn't mean they should do something. And I cannot believe that after 3 weeks of wearing one single pair of jeans, that those jeans don't not only smell bad, but probably look bad. And I would say, honestly, knowing from experience, when I've worn a pair of pants too long, feel bad. You feel bad. You feel a little bad. Like, just what am I doing? I'd cut it down to 2 weeks. Redo the rounds. 2 weeks. What do you think about that, Jennifer Marmer? I see you nodding.
I think that sounds reasonable.
Yeah. You're not living in a mine, Byron. You're living in a home in Massachusetts. 2 weeks. That's my sentence for you. Mess up your whole system.
Here's something from Christopher in Dallas. My wife insists on mixing her spaghetti and meat sauce together in one pot rather than serving the sauce on top of the pasta. Please tell her the sauce should be served atop the spaghetti. Please note, I do not seek a blanket prescription against combining pasta and sauce before serving, but specifically, in the case of spaghetti and meat sauce, the sauce goes on top, not mixed in. Guess what I'm having for dinner tonight, John?
Tacos.
No, it's spaghetti and meat sauce. What? Well, it's actually probably going to be penne and meat sauce because my wife hates spaghetti.
Yeah, spaghetti's junk. Little worms. Don't care for it. Don't care for it. Spaghetti. It's a really down the middle noodle. I don't like it. I don't care for it.
You want a radiatore or something?
No, no, no. I don't mind a long noodle.
That's the fancy duck of pasta.
Radiatore looks like little radiators.
Yeah.
And it does. You get a lot of sauce in those nooks and crannies. I'll give it that. I'll give it that, radiatore. Give you that. But like everyone in the world over the pandemic, I went pasta crazy. Couldn't eat enough pasta. And I was a part of the big bucatini run of 2020. I got into that big, thick noodle. Big, thick noodle with a starchy exterior, with almost extruded through a machine that gives it some little micro crevices to pick up sauce. I like that. Spaghetti's too slippery. You know what I mean? You don't know whether it's coming or going. Slippery. Don't care for it.
You're a little bunch of little worms.
A bunch of little worms trying to dodge that sauce. Let me tell you something about, I don't know what's going on in Dallas, Christopher, but you're wrong. I thought for a second, is he wrong? And yeah. All I had to do was go see what our friend Kenji Lopez Alt has to say over at Serious Eats. Just it's the right way to sauce pasta. Updated March 7th, this year, 2021.
He's on top of it.
Yeah.
New developments.
You make your pasta a little bit pre al dente, like a little bit undercooked. Shave off a minute or two from your favorite pasta cooking time for that particular pasta. Meanwhile, you heat up your sauce and guess what? A saucepan, a saucier. And then when you're ready to serve, toss that pasta in the sauce with a little bit of pasta water and a little bit of butter or oil to create an emulsion and cover that pasta right up. Everyone knows this. I didn't know it. I grew up the way you did, Dallas style, Christopher. You know, and I grew up in an Italian-American, partly Italian-American home. My paternal grandmother was a daughter of immigrants from Udine, Italy, which is northern Italy. But, you know, she grew up cooking a lot of traditional Italian-American spaghetti and red gravy type of stuff. And yeah, we would plop that sauce on top. I gotcha, but it's wrong. It's just not how you're supposed to do it. Specifically for meat sauce, right? Marcella Hazan, whose New York Times cooking recipe for pasta bolognese, which is considered pretty much definitive, it's right there in the recipe. You toss the tagliatelle in the sauce. You get a bit of coating. You go on the internet, you say, how do we do this with a bolognese? How's it traditionally served at the Chateau Marmont? You toss the noodles in the sauce. Of course you do. The only place that doesn't recommend this is The Guardian, the London newspaper. In their recent article that I found in their How to Eat section from January of this year, they're talking about spaghetti bolognese, which is known as spag bol in England. So that's how they refer to it. It's like a very common thing. And there's a lot of controversy about it because spag bol is an English food. You would never serve spaghetti with bolognese sauce traditionally in Italy is the issue because it would be a thicker, a wider noodle like a tagliatelle or something like that. And in The Guardian, they're like, well, in England, in spag bol, you put the noodles down, then you put the bol on top of it. Not the bol, but the bolognese sauce on top of it. Which is like, okay, we'll give you that. They also say that you can put bolognese sauce on French fries. So I'm closing this tab, The Guardian. You're wrong. You and Christopher Dallas are wrong.
It says here that guacamole is made out of apples and ramps.
Yeah. Is that what it says in The Guardian, how to eat section?
And a lorry. It says apples, ramps, and a lorry is how you make guacamole.
Yeah, make your ice cream with lard, put corn on your pizza. Thank you very much. This is English cuisine, or used to be in the 1980s. Anyway, everybody go search The Right Way to Sauce Pasta by J. Kenji Lopez Alt on Serious Eats. And I'm going to make this Marcella Hazan bolognese sauce because I haven't done it in years, and it's spectacular. I'm going to make it this weekend, I think. And I'm going to toss that pasta with the sauce. Sorry, Christopher, you're wrong.
We're going to take a quick break to hear from this week's partner. We'll be back with more cases to clear from the docket on the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
Hello, I'm your Judge John Hodgman. The Judge John Hodgman podcast is brought to you every week by you, our members, of course. Thank you so much for your support of this podcast and all of your favorite podcasts at MaximumFun.org, and they are all your favorites. If you want to join the many member supporters of this podcast and this network, boy, oh boy, that would be fantastic. Just go to MaximumFun.org/join.
The Judge John Hodgman podcast is also brought to you this week by the good folks over there at Squarespace.
Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time. All in one place, all on your terms. Time, Jesse.
Have you heard about this Squarespace Blueprint?
No, tell me all about it.
Squarespace Blueprint lets you choose from a professional layout and build a website for your product or your service or your creations from the ground up. You can accept payments, including Apple Pay, among other things. It is all seamless and easy and comes out gorgeous, whether or not you went into it with big time skills. That's what Squarespace is all about, helping you express yourself and helping you share your work with the world.
Go to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to www.squarespace.com/Hodgman to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
The Judge John Hodgman podcast is also brought to you this week by Made In.
oh, when you're trying to buy cookware, it's like there's so many questions, so many choices, so many pros and cons. But you should know, Made In has only pros. Pros like Tom Colicchio, Nancy Silverton, Brooke Williamson. That's right, I changed the meaning of pro from good things to professionals who use Made In, because they do. Professional chefs love Made In cookware because it's got so many pros.
Can I tell you something about Nancy Silverton, one of the Made In pros?
Yeah, I would love to hear it.
My friend used to work for Nancy Silverton, or one of her restaurants. And not only did she adore Nancy Silverton, but Nancy Silverton personally catered her wedding.
That's a real pro move, if you ask me.
Yeah, just like getting Made In cookware. These are people with taste, if you get my double meaning.
I do.
This isn't a Johnny-come-lately company. This evolved from a 100-year-old kitchen supply business. And they work with multi-generational crafters to put together every single piece. So includes carbon steel, stainless clad, plateware, glassware. I know, John, you love all that stuff that you have in your cabinet.
Yeah, I got the glassware. I got the plateware. And I definitely love that carbon steel. And I love their stainless steel. It's got exactly what demanding chefs and I dare say demanding judges look for when they're buying cookware.
And you don't have to find a kitchen supply store. They sell it online. It's delivered straight to your door with the quality that the pros use.
And can I just say, it's at a fraction of the price of other top brands. That's for real. This is really good stuff and it's really affordable. And yet, as affordable as it is, I'm going to tell you this. Judge John Hodgman listeners get 10% off full-priced items from Made In. For full details, visit madeincookware.com/JJHO10. That's M-A-D-E-I-N cookware.com/JJHO10.
Welcome back to the Judge John Hodgman podcast. We're clearing the docket this week. I'm Bailiff Jesse. With me, Judge Hodgman. Here's a case from Nick in Seattle. Regarding your recent ruling on Friendsgiving, my friends and I have come up with two other Thanksgiving alternatives. The first is a gathering of friends and family holiday the day after Thanksgiving, and it has three simple rules. Bring your leftovers and pie, bring something to drink, and wear pajamas or otherwise comfy clothes. We call it Black Pie Day.
Oh, that's clever. I like that.
Instead of Black Friday,
a consumer-invented semi-holiday. A whole thing about Thanksgiving that I forgot last time I was mad about Thanksgiving, and just adds to the fact that Thanksgiving is a dumb holiday that should be canceled.
Yeah, I disagree completely, but that's fine. I'm going to read some more of Thanksgiving alternatives. Second, a group of us will regularly celebrate Danksgiving sporadically throughout the year, when we enjoy a roasted turkey and a homemade herbed butter that is currently legal in 19 states, Guam, and Washington, D.C.
Interesting.
Now to the dispute. At a recent meal, it was observed that I rarely consume a drink during a meal. I argued then that the perfect meal should be able to stand alone and require no beverage. Despite the fact that there were no counterexamples provided, no one at the table agreed with me.
All right, Nick in Seattle, hang on for a second. Everybody, Jesse, I'm sorry. If you love Thanksgiving, you love your family tradition, you love getting together with the people in your life who are meaningful to you, you love taking a day out of the year to reflect upon why it's lucky that you can be together. Of course, I heard you all when you wrote me letters defending Thanksgiving as a concept. So many of them were like, it's a day to be thankful and to be aware of what's going well in your life. And like, that should be every day. It doesn't have to be a day where I have to do a lot of work right after Halloween and right before Christmas and New Year's. It doesn't have to be a day where I have to worry about whether I'm going to just drive in a traffic jam to get to eat a meal with extended. No, it's a pain in the neck. It's historically complicated, to say the least. And yeah, I'm going to do it anyway. Boy, oh boy. I do not feel any better about Thanksgiving now that we have made our Thanksgiving plans than I did last time. If anything, I feel worse about it. But of course, I'm going to do it. See my family and make a turkey and everything else. Be thankful every day. But one thing that gives me comfort as this Thanksgiving comes up is that one listener recommended that I reflect upon the establishment of Thanksgiving as a federal holiday. You know, it was sort of celebrated catch as catch can on the calendar. Different states would set different times for different, you know, the Thanksgiving festivities and so forth, all until 1863, when Abraham Lincoln, influenced by Sarah Josepha Hale, an editor of a magazine who had been advocating for a national Thanksgiving Day for years and years, and all other presidents had ignored her. Abraham Lincoln said yes. He had his Secretary of State, William Seward, draw up a proclamation in 1863, establishing a national day of Thanksgiving, a federal holiday. And it was in the proclamation, it was stated that this was a time to reflect not merely upon the things we are thankful in this life for, but also specifically to do penitence. As the proclamation said, to sit in humble penitence for our national perverseness and disobedience. Now, if we were to reframe this holiday as one explicitly about humble penitence for our national perverseness and disobedience, I might get into it a bit more. But until then, you all enjoy your traditions and let me hate what I hate. Now, Nick, have a drink with your meal. Have a glass of water, dude. You say that there are no counterexamples provided for your theory that the best meal should be served without a beverage or could stand up without a beverage. There are several counterexamples. Look at every all of human history. Look at every depiction of a dinner table in all of history, in any painting or photograph, illustration. Look at the Last Supper. The thing Jesus Christ was handing out his body without some of his blood? No, let's do. Take this. This is my body. Take this wine. It is my blood. It's a pairing. It's a wine pairing. From the beginning of the Christian tradition, there was a wine pairing involved. Now, I don't drink wine, and sometimes the idea of pairing wine with food, how would you describe it, Jesse? It's a little...
Maybe it can be a little fussy.
A little fussy. Not for me, but I believe that it exists. I believe that there are flavor notes in certain wines and foods that complement each other, that enhance each other. And people have been drinking water at the table forever to cleanse their palate, especially sparkling water that actually scrubs your tongue to move on to the next course. And of course, you need water there. What if you choke on a thing? You got to get a little piece of food down. Something stuck in your throat or your throat gets dry. Everything in history is against you, Nick. You don't have to drink water or whatever at the table, but you're wrong. You're wrong. Another one is wrong.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, the answer to a mystery involving Fitchburg, Wisconsin. It's our most tantalizing tease ever. How could anyone change the channel?
There's no channel to change.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Judge Hodgman, we have a letter here.
Jesse, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I was wrong. Apparently, you can change the channel. I just received word.
Oh, no.
Everyone changed the channel during the break. They're all watching Archie Bunker now. So,
yeah.
Weird.
Can I give you some important news?
Yeah, please.
My daughter wants a knob TV for Christmas.
Yeah, I know.
And a Laserdisc player that she can connect to it.
Sure. Well, wait a minute. You mean like a DVD player or like a big, those big platter
laser, laser disc player. She wants a laser disc player.
Wowee.
Yeah.
You got to turn those over, you know, in the middle of the movie.
I know. Well, it depends on the quality that they put it on the laser disc. Sometimes apparently you don't. She was telling me about this.
This is the greatest.
Anyway, here's something from Olivia in Bellingham, Washington. My boyfriend Jesse's go-to karaoke song is Surfin' Bird by The Ventures, which he performs in the style of death metal.
Oh, boy.
He thinks it's awesome.
Wow. The defeat in your voice just there, Jesse Thorne.
He recently sang this at a work event in front of his bosses and over 100 colleagues. I was mortified. I'm asking you to demand he never sing this awful song again and that he pick a new karaoke song. I really love and admire his weirdness, confidence, and creativity, but this is too much.
Is it too much? Jesse Thorne, karaoke, The Empty Orchestra. You got a go-to song? Do you ever do one?
No. I don't think I've ever sung at karaoke.
Really?
Yeah.
You've got a wonderful voice.
Thank you. That's very nice of you. I think if I were called upon to sing karaoke.
Yeah. What would you pick?
I would pick Chantilly Lace by the Big Bopper.
Now,
hello, baby.
Chantilly Lace, Chantilly Lace, Chantilly Lace, Chantilly Lace.
Down.
Oh, it has more words than Chantilly Lace? Oh, I didn't know. Yeah. It's interesting. I always thought it was.
Wiggle in the walk and a giggle in the tongue makes. Yeah.
Whoa.
I don't know why I'm singing it like Elvis, but.
It doesn't matter. It You've got this. I'm excited. This is karaoke. We're doing it now. Jennifer Marmer, what's your karaoke song? You got one?
I have a few. I have a group of friends who, during regular non-pandemic times, we go to private room karaoke pretty often.
Yeah.
And we all
it's
have
not very
own...
COVID compliant these days, I suppose.
No, but we all have our own little lists of our go-tos that we keep on our phones.
Yeah.
So, it depends on my mood. Sometimes it's Flagpole Sitta. Sometimes Sloop John
you
B.
And me, you and me.
Sometimes I'm trying to remember. Some Cranberry songs. It really depends. It's all over the map.
Flagpole Sitta is my go-to by Harvey Danger. I love that song, and it's a great karaoke song. And the only reason that I try it, I don't think I ever achieve it. Because that's Sean Nelson, Harvey Danger himself. Guy's got an incredible voice. That guy can fly. That voice can go so high. Sean Nelson is a friend of mine, and I love him so much. You should go check out all of his work, including some of the later Harvey Danger albums, which no one ever listened to, which are brilliant.
Nice man.
And he's a really nice guy. I saw someone perform Flagpole Sitta at the Old Carriage Inn in Park Slope when David Reese would sometimes go there to sing karaoke. It was such an incredible vibe there. This young woman killed it. We had so many great nights at the Old Carriage Inn. And, you know, people had been part of that karaoke night for years, and they were so welcoming, and there was such an interesting group of people. The person who hosted the karaoke night transitioned. Incredible thing to be a part of and community to be a part of. David would always sing These Things I've Done by The Killers, and he would kill it. And a young woman sang Harvey Danger, and I was like, oh, I can do it. I can do it. I could never hit those high notes. And I'm caught with twin sadnesses. One problem is that the song that I really always want to sing at karaoke was never available at any karaoke bar ever. And that was No Children by the Mountain Goats. I have a feeling that's going to change now. I have a feeling that
now that it's a smash hit, you wanted to bring the joy of divorce to all of the people in the karaoke bar.
It's just one of the greatest songs in the world to sing with other people.
It's viral on TikTok is why
it's viral on TikTok. Available. Congratulations, the Mountain Goats. I can't wait to sing karaoke. But the other sadness is that the Old Carriage Inn shut down, like a lot of places in Park Slope. A lot of locally owned places got priced out even before the pandemic because their landlords wanted more and more and more money, and they get a tax break if a place is empty. So they just kicked them out and just reopened as a cafe, which is good luck to them, but we do not need more coffee in Park Slope. Anyway, karaoke. It's fun, Jesse. We should do it sometime when it's safe to do it.
Yeah, I'll do that. I mean, I am a quarter mile from Koreatown, where over 70% of the businesses are karaoke lounges. So I'm ready to go.
You would do so great as the Big Bopper, let me tell you. But the issue of the day is Surfin' Bird. Olivia's boyfriend, Jesse, in Bellingham, Washington, sings Surfin' Bird. You know the song. Bird, bird, bird. Bird is a word. By the Ventures. 1962, I think.
Yeah. How would you characterize a death metal singer singing?
Well, I don't have to do it because Olivia sent us video of him doing it. So we actually can hear it for ourselves and judge Jesse live.
This does look like it's taking place in a conference room.
It's a conference room, and I don't think you ever hear the song. The acoustics in this multifunction room at this corporate retreat are not the greatest, but you'll get a flavor of what Jesse's up to here.
I've seen enough, John.
Yes, I've seen enough as well. What do you see? How do you describe what you see and what you hear?
I wouldn't say it's in the style of death metal.
No, because the style of death metal would be more like what, Jesse? Can you do a verge?
I mean, it depends on the subgenre of death metal, and we're going to get an angry letter from our friend John Darnielle of the Mountain Goats, no matter how I do this. Both Stuart Wellington of the Flophouse and John Darnielle of the Mountain Goats are going to write me letters about subgenres of metal.
Right. But this is specifically Norwegian surfing death metal.
Yeah. The classic is a sort of nightmarish growl.
That hurt my voice.
We're not doing it justice.
No,
it is a truly extraordinary sound.
It's an incredible. It's like throat singing. It's a hugely impressive human sound that not everyone can do. Obviously,
yeah. Like this guy,
Jesse either.
This guy is doing kind of like a. You know, if it's anything, maybe it's punk rock, but he's a little too cute. He's being a little too cute and he's not selling it.
One of the things that I see is he's jumping around. If you're doing death metal or punk, you stand still.
Yeah, hold that microphone with both hands.
You hold that microphone with both hands and you stand still like an icon, like a whatchamacallit, a monolith of hard truth. So I'm going to agree with you on this one, Jesse. His performance is not on point. But, and karaoke, you need to be a performer. You can't just half butt it. You gotta lean in. I think that his performance is not on point. His presentation is not on point. But I do hear the sound of people having fun.
There's one guy who just goes, "What?"
They are all having fun. Except, obviously,
what?
For Jesse's girlfriend, Olivia, who's taking this video. And aside from Olivia, all the other people in this room seem to be guys. And they seem to be having a good time. So I asked Olivia who his work pals are. Where does he work? And it turns out Jesse works at a aeronautics firm. They make electric airplanes. And specifically, Olivia said, quote, "I know he works with a robotic arm, which lays carbon fiber to create the airplanes." Jesse?
I know he works with a robotic arm. I've met it at the Christmas party. Besides that.
It reminds me. You know, I met Jonathan Colton at college. He lived in a suite two floors below me, and his suite was full of truly incredibly intelligent engineers, mathematicians, and all of them were really interesting oddballs. And they all got together and they had a project that they were going to build a robot. And I just remember walking upstairs to my room late at night on a Friday night or whatever, and the door to Jonathan's suite was open. And Aaron and Andrew, and I think one other guy were in there, and Aaron was saying, "All right, you guys, I want a working arm by Friday. A working arm by Friday."
On my desk.
Anyone who works with a robotic arm is a friend of this podcast. And anyone who loves a person who works with a robotic arm, like you, Olivia, is a friend of this podcast as well. You are our friends.
And any robot who listens to this podcast, we look upon skeptically. You have to demonstrate your loyalty to the human race. Don't want to get overturned.
Exactly. Exactly. I don't need an AI revolution today. No, thank you, Satan. Satan bot. But I'm going to say this. Jesse did not do any.
Not today, Satan bot. Not today.
Jesse did not put his career in jeopardy at this corporate retreat at Lake Tahoe, which is where it happened. His friends making electric airplanes loved this bit. And that's fine. But you were right to be mortified, Olivia, because Jesse can do better. Jesse, if you want to continue to do this, it's not a bad bit, but you have to commit to the bit. Go listen to some death metal. Go check out some subgenres. See if you can make your voice do the thing that they are doing. Plant your feet. Become a nightmare god of abysmal truth. And sing Surfing Bird the way it was meant to be sung in the Norwegian surfing death metal style. We did receive a letter, Jesse Thorne. So the other week in episode 540 of the Judge John Hodgman podcast titled Spooky Day, Spooky Night, one of our Halloween themed ones, we ruled that listener Rob could no longer wear his minion themed pajama shorts outside his home because they're inappropriate and they're making Nick Weiger too excited. Now, Jesse, I learned through Twitter, a social media platform that serves us only good in this life, including this fun thing I learned. Rob, turns out, is the features editor at the Capital Times newspaper in Madison, Wisconsin. That's the big newspaper in Madison, Wisconsin, capital of Wisconsin. So, Rob, let me pitch a feature to you. Put us in the newspaper.
Yeah.
Put us in the newspaper, Rob. We'll come out there. We'll do a show. Do a show in Madison.
We'd love to.
Yeah. I've done shows at great theaters there and then go to the Tornado Room after. But Rob does not live in Madison. He lives in Fitchburg, Wisconsin, wherein we discovered on Google Maps a mystery in the part of Knollwood Park that is in Fitchburg across the border. I looked it up. There's one weird, mysterious review of the park on Google Maps pointing out that a mysterious electric fence had appeared across the pass and no one knew why. Well, it turns out lots of people knew why. Listeners Natasha and Megan wrote in to tell us that the fence was brought in to Knollwood Park, Jesse, to contain the goats.
Oh, wonderful.
Another listener, a park ranger in the Madison-Fitchburg area, explained, quote, currently the city of Madison has a herd of goats to help manage the many invasive brush and forbs. You know what a forb is, Jesse?
I couldn't tell you what a forb is, John. I presume it's 1920s drug slang.
No, it's a plant. It's a plant. It's a plants. Forbs are plants that are not grass-like, but do not become woody. It's like milkweed. Sunflowers are forbs. Anyway, I quote on, since these conservation parks are an attempt to restore a natural and more native habitat, the goats allow for large-scale clearing without the use of pesticides or fossil fuels. Unfortunately, goats have a reputation of being escape artists and need reminding of where their place is, hence the fence, signed.
A goat's place is in the home.
Goat's place is inside the fence, not outside the fence. Signed, Rager Name Redacted. Didn't want us to use their name. Megan sent photos of the goats, which we will post on the show page at MaximumFun.org and on our Instagram account, which is at Judge John Hodgman. But Jesse, we also received a letter from John Allen regarding another mystery from episode 540, the Bridgewater Triangle area of Massachusetts, but you will hear about that after the credits.
Very exciting.
Bridgewater Triangle comes back.
On the way to preschool, my four-year-old let me know something.
What's that?
She asked me, when you were a kid, did you ever go underground?
Hmm.
And then as I was about to reply, she said, children used to be sent underground, but they're not now because it's not safe. Only grown-ups go underground.
Yeah.
They go there to get rocks, but it's dangerous because they could go to the center of the earth.
That's where the best genes are found.
Mm-hmm.
the center of the earth. Those are the genes you want to get. What are they called? Fade freaks?
Sick fades.
Sick faders.
Gotta get those sick fades. I call them fade. You said sick. You invented sick faders, but I support it.
Sick faders, fade freaks, drips.
That's all. Just don't send children to the center of the earth.
Don't send children to the center of the earth. We resolved this. The hollow earth is no place for kids. You got mole men down there.
Do watch the 1987 film Journey to the Center of the Earth, starring Kathy Ireland and Emo Phillips.
I will. Do not watch The Descent, the 2005-ish horror movie, which is one of the scariest things I've ever seen. I've not been able to watch it since.
The docket is clear. That's it for another episode of Judge John Hodgman. Our producer is Jennifer Marmer. Our editor is Valerie Moffitt. I'm checking the time. I got to get to the center of the earth. Follow us on Twitter at Jesse Thorne and at Hodgman. We're on Instagram at Judge John Hodgman. Make sure to hashtag your Judge John Hodgman tweets, hashtag JJHO, and check out the Maximum Fun subreddit to discuss this episode. Submit your cases at MaximumFun.org/JJHO or email Hodgman@MaximumFun.org.
Yeah, we'll please do it. Time. We need cases to have the show. Please send in your disputes.
We love your cases. No case too small. We'll talk to you next time on the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
Ooh. Welcome to the bottom of the mysterious, impossible community swimming pool here in Bridgeton, Maine. I am your ghost host, John Hodgman, imitating the voice of famed New York storyteller Edgar Oliver. Look him up. Speaking of ghost hosts, yes, I know the other day I got it wrong when I said the ghost host at the Haunted Mansion in Disneyland was voiced by Thurl Ravenscroft. I know, I made a mistake. It was Paul Frees. I'm sorry. Please stop sending me letters. Cursed spirits, leave me alone. Although Thurl Ravenscroft does voice one of the grim, grinning ghosts in the Haunted Mansion, and he was the voice of Tony the Tiger, so I did get that right. Pedants. Meanwhile, some news from here in Bridgeton, Maine. I read in the Portland Press Herald of Portland, Maine, that the Shawnee Peak Ski Resort, which, as you know, is located here in Bridgeton near my impossible swimming pool. And as you know, the Shawnee Peak Ski Resort was founded in 1938 and is therefore Maine's oldest ski area, was recently sold. Just last month, Chet Homer, Shawnee Peak's owner and a native New Englander, sold Shawnee Peak to out-of-staters, specifically Boyne Resorts, which, as you know, is headquartered in Boyne Falls, a village in Charlevoix County, Michigan. Oh, did I not pronounce that correctly, Michiganders? I'm sorry I didn't say Charlevoix or whatever I'm supposed to say. You got so mad at me for saying Mackinac instead of Mackinac. It's spelled that way. Get it together on your maps. In any case, Boyne's Falls is located on the Boyne River near the shore of Lake Michigan, which brings us now to your special haunted Great Lakes Beach Report. Did I scare you? Did you think that I was going to cross the streams between this weird segment and that weird segment? Did you think I was going to fold them into one completely self-indulgent monologue, creating a time-space rip of self-regard in which we would all perish? No, that was merely my little joke. I am actually here in the secret post-credits sequence to read you the promised letter from one John Allen, a former resident of and pastor in the Bridgewater Triangle, that most haunted region of Massachusetts, encompassing the towns of Taunton, Massachusetts, and Wampa, Massachusetts, and Bib Fortuna Borough, Massachusetts, that we learned about just weeks ago, herewith the text of his missive. Dear Judge John Hodgman at the bottom of an impossible community swimming pool in Bridgeton, Maine, my name is John Allen, and my ears perked up at your recent mention of the Bridgewater Triangle. I served until recently as a member of the clergy at a church that fell within its boundaries. About a year ago, I received a voicemail from the leader of a group called the, quote, Bridgewater Triangle Paranormal Investigators. It was from a man with a phenomenal Boston accent who had called to tell me that a Sasquatch was tormenting a family of ghosts in a small patch of forest across the street from our church. He asked if I might be willing to appear as a guest on their YouTube channel while performing some sort of ritual to bring the paranormal kerfuffle to an end. This was not something I felt able to do in good faith, and it had gone out of my mind until your mention brought it back. Although I have recently moved to serve a church in Maine, oh, welcome, I believe I still have access to the audio of this voicemail. Well, dear listeners, you can only imagine I hurried him to please, please send me the voicemail from the Bridgewater Triangle Paranormal Investigators. And here you are about to hear it. They are a really lovely duo who sneak through the woods at night looking for the Bigfoots and the things that go bump in the swamp. They have a YouTube channel, which I encourage you to check out. So far, I've watched a couple of them, and they haven't said anything racist yet. But if you find something in there, just let me know, and I'll revoke my recommendation. Until then, hear this, the sound of a call from the darkness within the Bridgewater Triangle.
Hi, this is here. I'm from the Bridgewater Triangle Paranormal Investigators. The other night, first of all, we run a YouTube page. We investigate the paranormal. The other night, we were on Highland Street in Milton, which is a hot spot for paranormal activity for all kinds of paranormal investigators. It was said that there's a family, apparitions of a family that wander the street. However, we were doing an investigation down there, and we got a lot of clear responses on our spirit box, which we use for white noise, and there's been a lot of voices coming through that would say, help us now, please help us. So we believe maybe that these apparitions, these spirits haven't really passed on yet to the other side. Maybe they're stuck in some kind of purgatory. However, the bigger thing is we feel that there is something evil in the swamp that surrounds the street. We have an EMF meter, and last night there was a high temperature on my EMF meter. Something huge and paranormal was giving the meter a high temperature reading. And we believe that since it is swamp land, it's Bigfoot territory, that there is something evil in those woods, and we think that this family, the spirits of this family, might be in danger from this. So we were wondering if that's something that you guys could check out, if maybe you could bless the street, help these spirits move on to the other side, if that's something you're interested in doing with us, if you prefer to be on camera, off camera doing this, I don't know. You can call me back. My number is... Thank you.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.